Transportation Committee will come to order. There being a quorum, the first thing we will do is some housekeeping business left over from last couple of days. And what we'll do is entertain a motion to lay almost all of the subcommittee and subdivision reports on the table, with the exception of Senate File 958. So I'll entertain a motion for that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that we lay, with the exception to Senate File 958, the subcommittee and subdivision report on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Senator Larson. Sorry, I didn't mention which ones those were, but they will be Senate File 1121, Senate File 1111, Senate File 1163, Senate File 1164, Senate File 1276, Senate File 378, Senate File 658, Senate File 351, Senate File 1448, Senate File 1384, Senate File 614, Senate File 223, Senate File 127, Senate File 580. And there are copies in your folder of each of these Senate file reports. Is there any discussion? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this may be a question for staff. Some of these have to do with bonding subjects, and I just don't know what the direction is to committees in terms of sending messages to the Capital Improvements Committee about our bonding priorities. Do we do that through the vehicle of the omnibus bill, or are we doing the letter? Are we sending them forward? Or okay,
Mr. Chair,
Senator Langset.
Formally, they will go to the Finance Committee, but usually the chair of the Transportation Committee forwards a letter to me with the high priority items, and okay, he and I usually have some conversations that. But technically, if they go to the Finance Committee.
Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Dibble,
in wrapped within the larger finance bill that we're going to work on next week. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support the motion.
Any other discussion? To lay these on the table, please signify by aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The next one is Senate File 958. We'll entertain a motion to send that to Judiciary because it deals with eminent domain and property entry.
Make that motion.
Senator Rest.
I make that motion.
Did we adopt a subcommittee report?
Yes. We
adopted. Senator Rest, I believe our motion has to be to pass it and to forward it to Judiciary.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 958 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Judiciary.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Any discussion? Senator Ortman. You should have a copy of it.
That's the
committee report.
That's just the amendment.
This is the committee report. Senator Ortman, any follow-up? Any other discussion? All those in favor of passing this to Judiciary, say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Thank you. Okay, we have six bills to hear this morning, and the first one we're going to hear is one that was the end of yesterday, Senator Scheid, Senate File 413.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize to the committee. I have already apologized profusely to Mr. Brown, who's with me from the city of Brooklyn Park, for I was chairing my committee meeting and got so engrossed in two difficult bills that I neglected to get here. Actually, I forgot. And so I'm sorry, I have to be honest about it. And apparently nobody knew where I was, which probably that's okay. So I apologize for not being here. But here we are right now. And I know you want to move. It's Friday morning. And Senate File 413 is actually, I think it's a ask for bonding, you know, bond proceeds. But I will take money anyway. You know, we can get it here. We had the money. It was on the list. And this, if you hadn't heard of Devil's Triangle before, you may have heard of it. Senator Larson knows about it because they kind of set our project aside to have the money available for the Crosstown, which also needs that work. So I don't think I'm not here to be in competition. We need more money. And I'm going to have Gary Brown, who's our Director of Engineering and Building Inspections in the City of Brooklyn Park, speak to you. And I would say, and maybe he's going to say this as well, but frankly, this certainly has an impact. It's located within the City of Brooklyn Park. And it affects this particular intersection affects probably more people who aren't from Brooklyn Park than not, because it's kind of on the western side of the city, but it's people in Champlin and North and people Maple Grove, people way up into Anoka County even. It has an impact on them. And to say nothing, if I would like to go to Maple Grove on 85th Avenue North, I choose not to. My one accident as an adult happened here, and it wasn't real serious, but it was because of the configuration that's there and the burden that's happening because of the population growth in that area. So I'm going to ask Mr. Brown to speak to you, and then we'll, you know,
thank you, Senator,
to the rest of your work.
Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Gary Brown. I'm the Director of Engineering and Building Inspections for the City of Brooklyn Park, and it's great to see Senator Langseth. I've been in the business for a number of years, and I've actually testified before him in several times, so I hate to admit how many years I've been doing this. As you note on the handout that we gave you, the top of it is entitled, as the Senator Scheid indicated, The Devil's Triangle. We have been told by many people not to call it that, but I think after I get through with my testimony, you will see why it is called that. The map indicates a grade separation of Trunk Highway 169 of the mainline traffic over the top of the BNSF railroad. Yesterday you saw some of the testimony talking about issues with the BNSF north of here. Saw 81 and in 85th Avenue, which is also Saw 109, is also crossed by this trunk highway. It includes a new urban tight diamond type interchange at Kasaw 109, a flyover ramp for southbound 169 to southbound 81, and a slip ramp for Kasaw 81 to northbound 169. I've actually had two stints with the City of Brooklyn Park, and we were looking at this project many, many years ago, at least 25 years ago, and the only thing that's happened to this project is it's got more expensive, as Senator Langseth, I'm sure, understands. Why is this project, why should it be funded immediately? Congestion. The Trunk 169 and 81 intersection is ranked as the most heavily traveled at-grade intersection in Minnesota, with nearly 80,000 vehicles a day entering the intersection. The Trunk 169-81 intersection was ranked sixth by the crash cost at $737,000 annually on the statewide top 200 high crash cost intersections list for the 2002 and 2005 time period. The existing Trunk Highway 169, Kasaw 109, which is 85th Avenue intersection, is also ranked third by crash cost at $979,000 annually on the statewide top 200 crash cost intersection list, and is the fifth busiest intersection in the state with 40,000 vehicles per day. Safety. Kasaw 81 and Kasaw 109 intersection was ranked high on Hennepin County's listing with a crash rate of 0.77 crashes per million entering vehicles, which was significantly higher than the average crash rate in Hennepin County. Trunk Highway 169 BNSF at-grade railroad crossing was ranked as most hazardous crossing in Minnesota out of 4,552 crossings statewide, number two on that list is so far back you can't see it. I remember a number of years ago, and maybe some of you saw, Channel 11 was doing it, a live telecast sitting on a BNSF engine as they were going through the at-grade crossing on 169. And of all things, somebody drives through the lights and the barricade and crashes in live on television into the side of the engine. Fortunately, nobody was hurt, but that's the number of intersection potential crashes that occur. We did a cost-benefit ratio. Due to the extreme congestion and the sheer number of accidents and the seriousness of those accidents, the cost-benefit ratio is extremely high for an interchange or a highway project. What do I mean by that? What I'm talking about is that the investment that this state makes into this, you will be getting that back very rapidly as compared to most highway projects. We all know that they improve safety. But this one, and when we did the benefit ratio, we weren't even including two of the intersections or the fact that the railroad crossing and how many accidents. We're just talking about that 169-81 intersection. Delaying the project for 2 years due to lack of funding will cost the traveling motorist nearly $3.5 million in personal injuries, auto crash repairs, and based on past history, unfortunately, delaying it will cost probably two more lives. Due to the cost of the project, a delay of 2 years will have a major rippling effect of delaying other projects around the state 2 years from now. When we appeared before the Met Council, TAB, I was amazed by the support we had with trying to keep this project on track. I couldn't understand why many of the other engineers around the metropolitan area were so, you know, emphatic about keeping this on track. And then after interviewing them, a couple of them after the meeting, they said, if you delay this project, what it means is that all our projects will get delayed. If you really think about it, it's a $51 million project, and by delaying that 2 years puts most of the projects 2 years from now behind. I wanted to talk a little bit about the recent accidents. In June of 2002, a car was traveling eastbound on 85th, was struck by a southbound semi-truck. The driver and passenger of the car were both killed. In April of 2003, a road rage incident, and that's not surprising with the number of cars that are sitting there in traffic. As they traveled south on 169, one driver went on the shoulder, rolled over, injecting her passenger who died. In June of 2004, traffic controls were out due to a storm. A car was traveling east on County Road 30. This is just a little bit north of the Devil's Triangle. Struck by an SUV, was going south on 169. 18-year-old driver of the car appeared to have the right-of-way and later died at the hospital. State Patrol handled the accident. A Brooklyn Park officer was struck by a car while on this accident, but he did not suffer injuries. In June of 2006, in other words, just last summer, Brooklyn Park Police and Fire responded to a reported multi-vehicle accident near the intersections of 169 and 81. Callers reported that one person was trapped in one of the damaged vehicles. The 47-year-old was extricated from the car by the fire department personnel, but unfortunately succumbed to her injuries. The crash occurred during the height of a thunderstorm. Where are we at today? The project status. Project design is nearly complete. We're just in the final stages of that. We anticipate that in April we'll be taking the municipal consent before the City Council for approval. We've already been there a couple of times. We anticipate absolutely no issues there. Right-of-way acquisition, we've been working with the state. We do not anticipate any problems there. We're very close to finaling that up. And the final drafts of the agreement with MnDOT and the local governments have completed, and signatures are expected within 60 days. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, this project is ready to go if we can get the money. We just can't go because there is no funds from MnDOT to do that unless we get your help here. We appreciate any questions, Mr. Chairman, that you might have.
Any questions? Senator Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Scheid. It's not a question, but I do think that this project and the Crosstown project are the best examples of where we're failing in our transportation infrastructure approach. And so I can tell you that it was not with great pleasure that we got the news that we would be taking from that our project would go forward at the expense of another project. And that's happened actually more than just this time. And while we're very happy that the Crosstown will begin reconstruction, I think you make an incredible case for why we need to address our transportation funding crisis. and believe that this has equal merit. So thank you, and hopefully we can all get our projects done.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I was here a few days ago talking about the completion of Highway 610, and actually that is complete through the city I live in, but the piece that Senator Limmer represents west from 169 to I-94 is yet to be completed, and that's not as well. It certainly in an indirect way affects safety in other areas, but this one, this particular intersection is there, it's functioning, and it's getting worse by the day because of the pressure on it. So this one has to do with human life and also cost to taxpayers, to insurance premium payers, as well as obviously the human cost in life. So it is a little different urgency, and the fact that it was ready to, and they're ready to go, I think you'd be ready to go, what, in May or June, is discouraging. So we hope that that somehow amongst all of us we find a way to get these, some of these projects back on track.
Mr. Chair.
Appreciate your indulgence.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad you're bringing this forward. It kind of puts a nice, you know, fine point on the subject of what we're doing in terms of transportation leadership in this state and this metro area. And while I feel bad, I don't feel guilty. I feel bad that, you know, so much of the money that was going to be used for this purpose, you know, is going to my corner of the world to serve not just my constituents, of course, but you know, folks who pass through.
I drive it.
Yeah. You know, and for the record, you know, had I had my way, we would have done this project actually in 2000, I think in 2001 it was slated, the Crosstown Commons, and we got into a big mess over here in the legislature. Again, that even that delay really spoke to how slow it is to, because we're not funding things well enough, how slow it is to bring projects online because of funding. So by the time construction was slated for 2001, the design was already out of date, and that became a big mess. And then, of course, the ensuing delays are a matter of history. So saying thank you to Senator Scheid for bringing this forward and illustrating the point that we contend with every day in this committee.
And Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman,
thank
I hope
you.
I'm doing more than illustrating. No, I understand. I appreciate that. I understand exactly what you mean. I just hope that we also can get the money. And, of course, I'm supportive of those efforts.
Mr. Brown, I like the way you wrote this up, and I have to add my personal story about this, too. It was about in 2001, being from the South Metro, I don't go through this intersection very
often. That's a good thing.
But I did go through it in 2001 about three or four times because I could see Fleet Farm, but I didn't know how to get there. So I know exactly what you mean when you said that it's the visitors that are most affected by this.
Mr. Chair, if you'll notice, Fleet Farm is very pleased with this design. As you can see, there's a new intersection right in front of their store, so it'll be a lot easier for you and for me to get there.
I'll try it out. Thank you. Any other questions? Any other comments? With that, this project will be Senate File 413 will be laid over for possible inclusion in a larger transportation bill. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, members. Thanks.
Thank you.
With that, we're going to go to the top of the agenda, Senate File 1071, Senator Dibble. And this is a continuance of a hearing that we started earlier in the week. Senator Dibble.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1071, if folks don't remember, has to do with making use of cameras to assist in the enforcement of traffic control devices, otherwise known as Photocop Stop on Red program that City of Minneapolis instituted a number of years ago that's now on hiatus. And during the 8 months that it was up and running, despite the fact that there was you know, a lot of signage and letting folks know that there was such enforcement, still 25,000 vehicles ran those red lights, which really illustrates the point that red light running is a real safety problem and a big concern of public policy for us. Mr. Chair, I think one of the questions that was asked and Pat McCormick of Driver and Vehicle Services was asked to research was whether or not the amendment that was added Tuesday, which prohibits a citation like this going on a driver's record, amounted to masking, which would get us at crosswise with the federal regs that have to do with commercial driver's licensure. And Ms. McCormick, y'all may have seen the email, did consult with the federal folks and someone from the federal office answered that it does not amount to masking. And I don't know if Ms. McCormick wants to speak more articulately to that. Did you want to hear further from Ms. McCormick, Mr. Chair?
Perhaps we should get that particular opinion on the record. Please state your name for the record. Thank
members
you.
Of the committee, for the record, my name is Pat McCormick. I'm the Driver and Vehicle Services Director. And after the discussion at the hearing, I contacted the Minnesota Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration department, and they checked also with Washington to concur and reviewed the legislation. And their belief is that because the offense in the bill has to do with a citation being put on the owner of the vehicle and not on the driver, and the language that they stated to us is because it's not an observed citation or conviction on the driver, they consider it out of the scope of masking, and so it would not be considered masking, and we would not be in violation of federal regulations.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick. Senator Dibble. Senator Hartman. Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, I think it has to do with the fact that the it isn't observed because the way they read the bill, the photograph has to do with the vehicle and identifying the owner of the vehicle and not identifying the driver. And because of that fact, that's why they use that term observed in the in their language that they sent back to me.
Senator Ortman.
Bad cars.
Senator Ortman, I believe what we're saying is that the owner is the person, not the vehicle. Senator Ortman. Senator Ma.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick, that would also then be applicable to the school bus arm situation, the emergency vehicle passing, as well as another bill that we've seen come through this committee on the hit and run, where it's the vehicle that's the object that's being used to identify, and the presumption then passes on to the owner of the vehicle, not necessarily the driver of the vehicle, correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator Moi, that's my understanding.
Thank you.
Senator Ortman.
Chair.
Senator Dibble.
You on Judiciary, Senator Ortman? Oh, good.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Moi.
The masking issue and its impact on you know, the masking issue is a transportation issue. And so I think that if we're going to have that conversation on this bill, this committee ought to engage in that conversation. We certainly could have that conversation in judiciary, but I think that it's the masking issue and driver's licenses and the impact of insurance, et cetera, is within the jurisdiction of this committee.
Senator Artman. Senator Artman, are you on your mic?
Your mic
we're not getting.
Lift it up a bit, see if that helps.
Speak up.
Now try.
No.
I think it's broken.
It must be broken.
We want to be able to hear you.
Is that better?
Yes.
I think that we should be. There is jurisdiction here for the question of masking, but there's also jurisdiction in the Judiciary Committee about the impact of that. What are we saying as a society if we're going to all of a sudden convict vehicles and owners and not people for their conduct? And so I'm hopeful that the chair of the Judiciary Committee will acknowledge that that would be within the jurisdiction of the Judiciary Committee and that we would have a full hearing on that. Otherwise, I think we better stop right here and have a very long conversation about convicting vehicles and owners and not people for their conduct. If I can be assured that we're going to have that conversation in the Judiciary Committee, that issue will not be primary to me as we continue this conversation.
If Senator Ortman will come, we will have that conversation.
Thank you, Senator Moy.
I'd be happy to be there, Senator Moy.
Senator Jungbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, and Senator Dibble. I have the same questions that Senator Ortman has is, as we go through this, as Ms. McCormick stated, as long as so we're basically ticketing the vehicle, so anytime we're outside of that scope, we would indeed be masking, so we need to be very careful in how we identify this as well as other issues that were just mentioned by Senator Moy. So I'm really concerned about the slippery slope we're going down and if we're not identifying the driver, because I guess I envision the use of Photocop in terms of high-resolution cameras where we do have an ability to actually identify the driver, which at that point, if we can identify the driver, we are indeed masking. And I'm not interested in ticketing vehicles and accusing vehicles of committing specific infractions.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, there was one of the DNR officials was referring to a new technology that was used experimentally on a couple of the lake accesses in Lake Minnetonka this summer called Eyelids that has some high-definition cameras and identifies the when a boat is backing into a boat access to determine, and it can identify whether they have any vegetation on, which is illegal, and record it identified both the boat registration and the license number of the vehicle. After that experiment, the developer of that said that this next round of experimentation, the cameras are even more high definition. Well, that was used for education, and even though it was referenced as Photocop, it was not, at least in that application, used in that way. It would seem to me that the technology is available to, in fact, modify this setup so that you could identify the driver and that we wouldn't have to be going through this, that you're ticketing. Obviously, it would be simpler and a greater moneymaker to do the vehicle and the owner than it is to do the driver. But I think in the matter of justice, it would be better if we sought out or used technology that actually identified the driver. Is there any response in terms of the availability or why that option? You know, you have tried, even though this was rejected, why not go back and find the technology that would make it work so that you get at the real culprit and we do, in fact, improve safety, if that's the major goal.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do believe taking pictures of the driver's face was considered. I'll have Councilmember Ostro speak more expansively to that. I think the it creates a whole new set of issues, creates all kinds of new heartburn for folks around privacy, and maybe people don't want to be seen. They don't want the other person in the car to be seen. In some cases, maybe an issue. And if we can get maybe we can get the camera to focus in just on the driver, maybe that's the magic. But it creates a whole new set of issues that people raise around privacy concerns. I mean, we already have the issue that Mr. Neumeister raised about how long are we going to hold on to these photos, and what is our retention schedule and our standard around that, which are legitimate issues to be raised.
Mr. Chair, and to Senator Dibble's point.
Please identify yourself.
I'm Paul Ostro from Minneapolis City Council. It's good to be back with you here this morning. I just want to affirm Senator Dibble's comments as it relates to some of the discussions that took place on our council, because all of you are aware that there are concerns here involving privacy and Big Brother, and that is exactly the issue that's raised by, absent those objections Senator Olson's suggestion, I think, would be worth looking at. But that's the problem that we looked at to some extent too when this was debated, is we wanted to make sure that this was done in a way that showed the maximum sensitivity to those privacy issues. And identifying those drivers and looking inside that vehicle in that way was something that our council was not comfortable with.
Senator Saltzman.
On that point, Mr. Chair, I put a ski mask on and I drive through a red light. You can't identify me. I have sunglasses on. You can't identify me. I just wanted to respond of, you could put your hands over your face driving through a red light if you wanted to. But I go back to the fact that if we're concerned about the vehicle being ticketed, if I own the vehicle, I have the keys. If I give them to my daughter and she's irresponsible, it's my car. I guess I go to those kind of issues, because why are we even talking about this legislation? We don't have a cop on every street corner. We don't have, police following every school bus. And that's why we're talking about this. It's about public safety, and that is within the parameters, to some extent within this, particular body and this committee. So I just go back to, why are we even talking about this kind of legislation? Is because we want our streets to be safe. We want our intersections to be safe. When people are irresponsible, this is a disincentive for them to speed through these red lights, knowing that someone can come find them. So if it's your daughter, if you've lent the car to a friend, if your wife is driving the car, your husband's driving the car, vice versa, whatever, I think that we're not going to put this on their record, is my understanding correct? So it's the fine, it's the penalty, that next time you give the keys to your car, you're going to be thinking about that, or you're going to have a discussion with your child. I would want to know that my child was going through a red light if she had my car, or my son, or my husband, for that matter. So those are, I guess, the kind of things that I look at this. We have video surveillance in our grocery stores, I think in dressing rooms within department stores, and obviously this is a public entity that's looking at doing that, but it's all about, we're not trying to look inside that car. We are protecting privacy. We're trying to identify where we have public safety issues, and I guess that's where I'm coming from on this. I feel very comfortable not going to try to find people's faces, because I think that's going to create a whole other... I think on WCCO right now, on their website, there's the Don Shelby lookalike contest or something. And even a high-resolution camera, how do you know that was really me behind the car, whereas a license plate is a whole different issue?
Senator Jungbauer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess that was almost a contradictory statement when you say we have cameras in stores to identify people that are committing the crime. Then, if this is a problem and it is a public safety issue, then we certainly ought to identify facially as to the best of our ability, which we do have high-resolution cameras. If we're going down this road, we need to ticket the person committing the infraction, not the vehicle. I mean, where's our personal responsibility? We're going to make somebody else potentially responsible, whether we should be responsible for our kids, but dang it, we ought to have their picture so we can hold it out there.
Yep,
I mean, this is just a really weird road to go down without going all the way. It's kind of an all-or-nothing deal, really.
Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, how do department stores get by with having cameras in dressing rooms? I mean, that's a good point.
Senator Artman, you'll answer that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that Senator Saltzman raises an interesting question. Why are we doing this? Why are we talking about this legislation? I, for one, would prefer to have a cop on the street than technology tracking me around trying to find who owns my car. I would rather have a police officer. I can trust that police officer. If there is violation of the law, it may also be an indication of something else. And I want that police officer there. I don't want the administration relying on cameras to do those initial stops. I want the police officer to do it, because then the police officer might also have an opportunity to see if there's someone who's driving drunk. Maybe that's what happened, and that's why the person ran the red light. Or maybe there are drugs in the car, or maybe there's something going on in that car. Maybe there's a gun in the car or a weapon. But we won't ever know, because we've all been safe and secure thinking we're just going to send a ticket to the owner of the car, and we're going to ticket the violator that way. And so we're all happy. We have money in the account. And so we don't have to worry about the commitment that we make to keep our communities safe on the street corner. And that's what I pay for when I vote for the public safety budget. I pay for cops on the street. They set a good example. They look after my community. They look after the community in Minneapolis and St. Paul. They're doing the best they can. And I think that this actually will hurt our efforts at public safety, because now we're going to modernize, we're going to use the technology, and we're going to actually replace really important, vital members of our community, the cops who were there. And I don't support the fact that we're going to have these stops, routine traffic stops, and we lose the ability to see what else is going on in the community.
Senator Saltzman.
Yes. So to Senator Ortman and Mr. Chair, and to our council member, is your intent of doing this is that you can then reduce your budget for police on the streets in Minneapolis?
Councilmember Ostrom.
Thank you for the softball question, Senator Saltzman. Absolutely not. We are looking at putting as many officers on the street as possible. We have dedicated the local government aid restoration that we have received exclusively to public safety and to police officers on the streets of Minneapolis. And this will not replace all the traffic officers in the city of Minneapolis either. In fact, I've been pushing for additional traffic enforcement probably for as long as I've been on the city council, and I think we finally are going to have the opportunity to beef up our traffic enforcement by adding 11 officers to traffic enforcement. So this is not an alternative to traffic enforcement by any stretch of the imagination. And when those traffic stops are made, there's no question, to Senator Ortman's point, there are quite often circumstances where there are other issues, drunk driving or guns or anything like this. But my only point would be there's no trade-off here. We are not in any way going to be reducing. In fact, we're going to be enhancing our traffic enforcement overall. But what this does allow us to do is to take the most serious intersections of our city where we have the most serious public safety issues and make sure we have the kind of enforcement that is clearly impossible. We can't station a police officer at those intersections as a full-time position. That would require just take the number of intersections and multiply the hours of the day, a large, large number of police officers, which then would not be responding to some of the other offenses that we have in the city. So this absolutely enhances public safety. I neglected to mention that we do have Lieutenant Greg Reinhardt here, who has run this program. So if any of your questions go to any of those specifics, he is available to give even more detail on that than I might be.
And just another question, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So has Minneapolis seen cuts in their public safety budget as a result of the during the last 4 years? Have you been able to increase the number of your police officers, or have you had cuts? And why have you had cuts?
Commissioner Ostman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Saltzman. Because of the loss of Clinton Cops and because of the loss of local government aid, we, a couple years ago, were at far below the numbers that we need to be as a city. We still want to increase those numbers further, but between the 2006 budget and the 2007 budget, we have added 100 additional law enforcement officers. We're in the midst of hiring all of them, but they are budgeted for through our last two public safety budgets. Senator Saltzman.
Thank you very much.
We have Bonoff, Jungar, and Dahl. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the reason why we're spending this amount of time on this bill is because we are raising critical issues that we're all wrestling with. I don't think that this is an easy bill because it raises those issues around privacy and around what are our rights. And so I started out thinking I supported this bill, and then I was really questioning whether I did as I listened to the testimony. And one of the things that has me still thinking that I would like to try this is because it's being brought forward by the Minneapolis Police and by the City Council. And those people who are closest to what's happening are telling us that they need some help, and they think that if we try this, this could make a difference. And so while I'm not sure that it doesn't I'm still not totally sure that it's the right approach, I think that it's worth a try. And I think by doing mitigating the risk by not having it on the insurance, that does help alleviate, you know, one of my concerns. As I was driving home from the last night committee meeting that I had, I was it was like 10 o'clock. I had was very tired. I was driving through an intersection. As I got halfway into it, I saw it was yellow. It turned red, and I thought, if we had passed this legislation, I could have a ticket right now. And I thought, is that a bad thing? No, that's a good thing. I shouldn't have done that. Anyway, so that's just a personal anecdote. But so I am going to reluctantly support this because I think we have to do something, and I think I wish we were putting these cameras on the streets where the murders are happening. And I hope that maybe if this works, if we try it, if we try it and we're successful, that we can put these cameras in some of the areas where we're having the most crime.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, if you give me the liberty. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment that we are using technology in significant ways beyond this. We are, for example, moving forward with a shot spotter technology that you may have read some about that will allow us to, already allows us to know where those shots are fired. We also have moved forward with cameras, in particular downtown. We have cameras and elsewhere. We're looking, we're right now moving forward with a 5-year technology plan for our department that will be about far more then stop on red cameras. And in fact, recently there was a homicide that was actually caught on camera. So we are using technology in many, many ways, and we're really just at the tip of the iceberg on these kinds of issues as we look at how we maximize our precious public safety dollars to make sure we can keep the people of our city safe and the people of our state safe.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
But, Mr. Chair, I'm sensitive to the slippery slope argument. I don't want to suggest that we're going to start sticking cameras everywhere for the purpose of citing people and enforcing behavior. The cameras that Senator Ostro or Councilmember Ostro is discussing, are similar, they're in downtown Minneapolis. They're similar to the kinds of cameras that are used inside of department stores just to kind of, help the police kind of keep track of what's going on and where everyone is and stuff. But being used with the intent, and I think the issue was raised, I think by the ACLU attorney on Tuesday about is this the tip of the iceberg with respect to traffic enforcement? Are we going to use these cameras for speeding, et cetera? And that is explicitly not the case. This bill wouldn't allow that. This is specific to traffic signal enforcement. I don't support that. City of Minneapolis is not pursuing that. No one else is, to my knowledge, and, of course, would be open maybe in judiciary to even further clarification and confining ourselves to just this application. And let me just say for the record, Mr. Chair, I I think this is an excellent debate, to Senator Bonas' point, and think everyone, with whatever view they have, Senator Jungbauer, Senator Ortman, and others, raise very, very valid, very sincerely held positions, so I don't begrudge anyone their philosophical perspective on this subject. It does raise issues that we need to grapple with.
We're going to get to Senator Jungbauer, Dahl, and Dave, but I have a question myself, and I believe we have someone from the police department there that can give me the question, the answer. If I were driving home and Senator Bonhoff zooms through the red light in front of me and I do catch her license number, she nearly caught me in the hit me in the intersection, and I report her license number, is there any follow-up that's done by the police department in that case? I've seen the car. I can identify the car. I can identify the license number, but I can't identify the driver.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Gregory Reinhart. I work for the Minneapolis Police Department. I am a lieutenant and the program manager on Stop on Red. First of all, we tracked that car down, tow it away, we take it away from you. But when we talk about the Stop on Red program, it still involves people. There's people all along who observe pictures. There's a police officer who follows up, looks at all these pictures, and then makes a determination, uses discretion, just like I did out on the street, whether I'm going to make a give somebody a ticket or not, and uses discretion whether to issue that ticket. We have had cases where an accident has occurred in the intersection, and it is so egregious that the officer has elected not to issue the stop on red citation and follow up and issue a summons to appear for a court trial because it's a misdemeanor violation. There is an opportunity, and of course, it's however you choose to configure your system, however you choose to staff your team that does this, that you can do follow-up. We've had several occasions where we've tracked down the owner of a vehicle, found out who was driving, and were able to issue a summons to appear for a misdemeanor violation for an accident.
Okay, but if there is no accident, if it's just the going through the red light.
It is possible to do this, Mr. Chair, but because of the sheer numbers of violations that we have, it would be difficult to have adequate staffing for that.
In the case where, for instance, if we're close to Senator Bonhoff's home and I follow her home and then identify her as the driver, could I make a citizen's complaint?
Senator Carlson, my name is Mary Ellen Hing. I'm with the Minneapolis City Attorney's Office. I'm the prosecutor on the Stop on Red case. In a case like that, yes, you could. If we had a witness who could come forward and testify to the facts of the violation as well as identify the owner, you could file a police report, and then you would be referred to my office. We would review that report, and we could issue a complaint by summons to the driver, even on a petty misdemeanor violation. And then you would need to come in and be our witness and testify in court for us. But in such a case, if we had all the elements of the case, a witness that could make all the elements at trial under oath, then that is a case that we would consider pursuing out of my office.
Okay, thank you. Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, can I just follow up on that question?
Actually, that's fine. I thought that question raised a lot more questions about what we were just talking about, so I'll let Senator Ortman.
Senator Ortman.
Just to clarify for the city attorney, you said that in that case, you would have to, as the prosecutor, charge or send the violation to the driver of the vehicle. In court, you would be expected to identify the driver. Is that true?
Because, as Senator Ortman, in a case like that, we would be prosecuting under the existing law. The existing law right now only allows for prosecution of the driver. The reason this bill has been brought forth is to expand the ability to prosecute to a second class of people, the owners of the vehicles. If this bill does not pass and the Supreme Court does not reverse, the only avenue in cases like this is to prosecute the driver. In such a case, we would need to have evidence that we could put forth to a judge to prove beyond a reasonable doubt the identity of that driver. If we did not have such evidence, that is a case that we would not be able to pursue.
Thank you.
Thank you. And could you restate your last name, please?
Heng, H-E-N-G.
H-E-N-G. Thank you. Senator Jungbauer.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I think she just sealed it for me. There's no way I can vote in favor of this any way, shape, or form now because we're expanding the prosecution to the owner of a vehicle as opposed to the driver, and that's really troubling to me to create a whole new expansion on who we can prosecute without knowing who the driver is, and stating that if you, again, Mr. Chair, were following somebody, you would have to be able to make that identity. I think that makes a case. Further, the way the language is, and I think it should be brought up in judiciary, I'm a little concerned that we are opening up a new level of liability in terms of if an accident happens, that now the owner of the vehicle would have a much higher exposure to liability for that accident without going directly to the driver of the vehicle that would cause the accident. So I'm really concerned that way and the way this is put together.
Mr. Chair, Senator Jungbauer.
Ms. Heng.
In response to the first point you made, I think the one thing I'd like to bring forth is that the school bus arm law, which our law is patterned after, was challenged in court by an owner who it was proven was not the driver. The driver was an African-American male. The owner was a white male. He went to court. He was convicted. The conviction was upheld by the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals, the decision is State v. Eakins, E-A-K-I-N-S, 720 Northwest 2nd. In that opinion, it distinguishes what we're trying to do in that the Court of Appeals agreed with what we're trying to do in that there are two classes of people that we're able to prosecute in a violation for a red light or a school bus arm. You have the driver, the actual user of the instrumentality that's used to violate the law. You also have the owner of the instrumentality. The Court of Appeals held that it was constitutional to hold the owner of that instrumentality responsible whether or not he or she was the driver. Because the owner has a responsibility to make sure that if they're driving, that they're driving responsibly. And as Senator Saltzman pointed out, if they're allowing someone to use their vehicle, that they know who that person is, they know that person is a responsible driver. And the purpose of the law is to discourage owners from allowing people who they believe would violate road rules and be irresponsible drivers from driving their vehicles. Because by removing the use of the instrumentality, it reduces the likelihood that a violation is going to occur. And so the Court of Appeals has found that that is permissible under the Constitution to have these two classes and to prosecute both. And so the owner being prosecuted because they own the instrumentality. As far as the second point that you made, I can't hardly think of a situation, especially if it's a serious accident, that a police officer would not be called to the scene. In such a case, it's very likely the drivers are going to be identified. And as Lieutenant Reinhart pointed out, there is discretion both on the police end and on the prosecutor's end in all these cases. We use prosecutorial discretion a lot in the prosecution of our Stop on Red program. And if there was some compelling reason to not go forward with the case, I, as a prosecutor, have discretion to dismiss that citation. In a case of an accident where the driver is identified, we could enhance the charge against that driver to a misdemeanor if the conduct was so egregious, and we would choose to prosecute that driver because we know right then and there they are the person that caused that accident. We're talking about situations every day where people run red lights multiple times a day where there are no accidents. Safety risk. They're just by sheer luck they didn't run into someone. And by prosecuting owners and making them think about who they're lending their vehicle to, the goal is to reduce the number of accidents by allowing only responsible drivers to be on the road and thereby increasing public safety at these intersections so that we don't have these type of accidents.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I could just add to Ms. Haynes' comment.
Councilmember Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually am a recovering attorney. I'm always told I still am one. But in my former line of work, I did prosecute for the cities of Blaine and Little Canada. And so I bring that perspective to this, but I will leave the legal arguments to Ms. Hayne today. But I would suggest that the public policy issue before you here today is one that relates to the compelling public safety concerns of running red lights, which I would argue is qualitatively different than many, if not most, of our other violations. When you run a red light, by that act alone, you are creating a risk of directly causing an accident. That's not true of speeding, for example. Speeding may be a factor in an accident, but qualitatively, running a red light is a very, very serious challenge to public safety, and I think we previously have suggested and shown you evidence to that effect. And when the school bus stop arm law was passed, similarly, there was a finding by the legislature at that point that the public safety concern for that violation rose to the level that it made sense in that circumstance to hold the owner accountable. You're not going to do that for every traffic violation, nor, in my view, should you. But I think what we are suggesting is that given the serious concerns related to running these red lights, especially at these very, very serious intersections, that there is that compelling public safety interest, and that's where this comparison to the school bus stop arm comes into line. So in terms of legalities and the Constitution, I think Ms. Hayne has made the argument that clearly this is constitutional, this is legal. In terms of public policy, of course, that's why all you are here. I would argue that we have made that compelling case that here this is in the interest of public safety and is good public policy to pass this legislation.
Thank you. We are getting later in our time here, and if we have some important points, let's make them, but let's keep an eye on the time, too. Senator Dibble, you'd like to
Mr. Chair, I have a couple of amendments that I'd like to offer that are responsive to some of the points that were raised at the last hearing.
Let's have some quick questions here that have been waiting for quite a while. We have Dahl, Day, Olson, and not true. Yeah, Jungbauer. I'm sorry.
I just wanted the quick follow-up because I believe you made the case on a compelling public safety issue, but the Eakins case actually scares me more because in a being good Samaritans, if you will, we always lend our vehicles out. We have extra vehicles. And when somebody at church needs a vehicle, their car breaks down, you just scared the heck out of me because we don't ask what their driver's record is. We don't take a behind-the-wheel tour of the city with them to see what's going on. And I think things like this, you just made the case that people shouldn't be nice neighbors anymore because now you did just make the case that you just made the owner liable and not the driver, and that is a very scary thing to do.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on what Senator Jungbauer would say, if the state issues a license to folks to drive, can we extend that responsibility then to the state for the actions of the driver if we're going to hold the owner of the vehicle responsible? And it seems to me we are kind of sliding down a slope that we don't really want to go. What I wanted to know, though, is I like the idea of it being a tool to help police, enforce the laws. But it seems to me that what's being used is a replacement. Even despite what you're saying, it seems to me it's replacing police officers, traffic cops on the street. What about how long does it take to actually process this information? Can it be used where you process? It's like you get a 911 call, and a police officer is sent to the site. Can you process this information and send that to a police officer in the area? Maybe a printout is brought in their vehicle is there so they can track down and try to identify that vehicle shortly after they ran that light. Is that possible?
Officer Reinhart.
Mr. Chair, Senator, can't do that yet. It can be done on CSI. There are some limits to technology.
When a
picture is taken of a vehicle going through a red light, it is sent electronically back to a processing center. It depends on where your vendor is. It could be here in Minnesota, could be in another state, could be anywhere actually in the world. That picture then is put in a format, basically in slide holders, for a person to look at, and the information is fed into it. It is not instantaneous. It takes generally a day to get that information, and then there is a process of when the officer reviews it. There is technology that is available to take any type of surveillance camera. In this case, this is a camera application. It is set to measure one type of behavior, red light running. There is technology to take those cameras offline and to pan, tilt, zoom, zoom in on a plate. An officer could look into that, and they could do exactly what you're asking to do. The problem with that is it takes an inordinate amount of staffing to do that. You'd have to have hundreds of officers to look at TVs and cameras. In this case, we're able to look at many different violations. I mean, I've issued thousands of tickets in my career. As the commander of the traffic unit, I have had my officers issue tens of thousands of tickets each year. It was my preference, and I see that State Patrol has left, it is my preference never to issue a ticket, because my bottom line philosophy is to change shape driving behavior to make sure that people are safe on the road. The way I teach, the way I instruct, the way I change behavior on a one-to-one basis is through handing out a citation. I've never seen anything like this system that changes so many people's behaviors. That's the bottom line. 31% reduction in accidents. I'd like to have an officer out on every street. I'd like to be able to turn the system on and do some instantaneous analysis. But we have officers, and we're placing them in the places that we need them to be, in the violent crime areas. We're enhancing the ability of the current traffic officers we have, but also enhancing the abilities of the officers on the street. I'm a street commander now. I have my officers do traffic enforcement. Why? Because it's a good crime deterrent. But I've changed my focus. When I was the commander of the traffic unit, if you were in the traffic unit and you didn't issue a tag, you didn't stay in the traffic unit very long. But out on the street, I want my officers to make contacts because I have a different focus. I want that gun off the street, and I want my officers to do that stop, and that's a way of doing it. But I still have an obligation to keep the streets safe. I still have an obligation to change, to shape, to stop people from crashing into each other, and we did that through this system.
Mr. Chair, just
Senator Dahl,
a follow-up question. I think I asked this the other day of some folks that came to talk to me. Of that 31%, do you have an actual number reduction on accidents, what they are? I'm just trying to get an idea of, you've had 25,000 tickets, and how many accidents, how many people are going through red lights that actually an accident doesn't occur. Just to kind of get a feel how effective we're being with this. I know 31% is a good number.
Perhaps we can go to another question. We have Senator Day.
I have Mr. Chairman, I have a question and then a comment. But the question is to Senator Dibble, is there any way that we could make this just a Minneapolis bill for a couple of years to see how well you all do?
Mr. Chair, I'm not necessarily opposed to that. I do know other cities, St. Paul is in the room. I don't know that they're going to come forward and ask for it explicitly. I know Bloomington testified on Tuesday? These days all run together.
Senator Dibble, Burnsville.
Oh, Burnsville, excuse me. Burnsville, the other B city in Senator Dahl's area. I'm not opposed to that, Senator Day. That would give folks more comfort.
My comment is maybe down the road.
Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, down the road, maybe if it gets to the floor, we could do that. To me, this is more than a slippery slope. This bill really worries me. And I know you've all done press conferences where you're pitching something, and then you invite some people to be with you, and then kind of in the middle of your pitch, somebody else starts talking, and then you kind of go, well, settle down a little bit. And I think that happened just a little while ago, and it got really scary in here because we have one bill that Senator Dibble is pitching, and Councilman Ostrom was all of a sudden saying, well, we're looking at maybe we should put cameras in where the homicide rate is really high, or maybe we should put cameras on some corners where there's a lot of drug dealing, or maybe we should. And then when you think back and you say, well, okay, there's $26,000 that there are 26,000 people that were taking in money for.
Stealing.
First off, that made me really nervous when that all was happening right here. And then we had people saying, well, we can add more policemen, but maybe the Plenty Administration. We all know the Plenty Administration gave $3 million to Minneapolis to help with their police extra. There wasn't a dollar that came to Owatonna or a dollar that went to Woodbury. But we put. So then you start wondering, well, now is it that we got this cash cow? Remember when Rich over here testified, he said Albuquerque had $5.2 million they took in with this thing? It really worries me, and I wish there was a way maybe we could just let Minneapolis go do their deal. And for Senator Carlson, maybe what you need is a camera in your car, and then you could have just took a picture of Bonna when it went through. And the second thing I was thinking maybe on my way home I should register my three cars to my wife. I don't know. They're at least being a politician running for office, I don't think I've ever had any red lights, but I've had a few speeding tickets in my day as the good reporter here checked into them once here a couple years ago. But anyway, I'm these are the things that can unravel really fast, and there are a lot of things in America that are great, and personal liberties and kind of your identity, and somebody says, well, that won't happen. Everything starts 10 or 15 years, but we might not all be here, but the next thing will be, whatever you do, somebody will be looking over your shoulder, and that makes me very uncomfortable.
Senator
Thank
Day,
you.
Senator Day, the next camera is going to be those people that go around ramp meters.
Mr. Chairman, trust me, if they put cameras on the ramp meters, we might be able to solve all of our budget problems.
Mr.
I'd be glad to do an amendment, Mr. Chair, to that effect on this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. And Senator Day, of course, as everyone has, raises valid questions. But I did want to be sure that the member's attention is drawn to page 2, lines 25 and 26. A program established under this section must be limited to the enforcement of official traffic control devices. That's, the speeding question. And require inspection and certification by a police officer. Actually, I think we need to insert an R.
Was inserted in the amendment.
Oh, the recorded images before a citation may be issued. That speaks to the earlier testimony from the city attorney and Mr. Reinhart.
And Mr. Chair, to Senator Day's comments.
Councilmember Oscar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wear more than one hat here today. I'm not only here as a member of the Minneapolis City Council, but I am a member of the board of the League of Minnesota Cities. The League of Minnesota Cities has this on its legislative agenda. I also am the chair of the Hennepin County Criminal Justice Coordinating Committee, which also has this on its legislative agenda. So the possibility of this being limited to Minneapolis puts me it's in some ways in a conflict, because that would not be in the interest of the League's position or the Hennepin County Criminal Justice Coordinating Committee's position to limit it to Minneapolis. It certainly would help us address the issues in Minneapolis to some extent, although I would point out that all of our constituents obviously travel outside the borders where they live. So even if I'm only worried about the public safety of the people I represent, I would argue that is enhanced more if this bill allows this tool for all of our cities. But I understand the question is maybe not a surprising one, but my preference would be that it be statewide, but as a council member of Minneapolis, we want to make sure that this can at least go forward in Minneapolis. And I did want to just clarify perhaps a bit of the comments I made earlier. We have absolutely no interest in expansion of this technology as it relates to traffic enforcement. When I was referring earlier to a technology plan for our police department, none of that has to do with any expansion of this of these cameras for traffic violations whatsoever. I mentioned ShotSpotter and some of the other uses, but I would argue that, for example, speeding would not be an appropriate use of this technology. That's my personal opinion. Others may or may not share that, but I will tell you there has been no consideration of that by our council. I don't expect that that would ever be considered by our council.
Any answers to or anything to follow up on Senator Dahl? Anything more? Okay, and we have. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Officer Reinhardt, you were going to give a number.
The actual reductions, Mr. Chair and Senators, the actual reduction in accidents was 32 accidents. This is in 16 approaches of the 12 intersections that we monitor.
Thank you, Officer Reinhardt. We have a question from Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have I'm struggling with this too, and it you know comes to mind somebody historic or famous made a comment that he who sacrifices liberty for security loses both and deserves neither, in essence. And I think it kind of gives you pause, and I think that's kind of some of the struggle that we're having, and I'm one of those. But I think I appreciate the Ms. Heng's discussion of the court case relative to the stop arm, and I'd like a little more clarification. And essentially, that legalizes what you're asking for here in terms of ticketing an owner versus just a driver. I think you said that case is still on appeal to the Supreme Court. Is that the decision that affected the removal of your initial experiment with this, or was this procedure thrown out on another matter? And could you clarify for me what that was?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson,
Ms. Heng.
The Eakins case was a court trial in Hennepin County District Court. The defendant was convicted. Through his attorney, he appealed the conviction to the Court of Appeals. In 2006, while my was pending in the Court of Appeals, this decision came down. So it is a decision by the Court of Appeals upholding the constitutional arguments that were made in the Eakins case in favor of the state and affirming the conviction.
Yeah.
In our case, at the district court level, the district court ruled that Minneapolis did not have the legal authority under state law to enact the ordinances and do the program. And we went up on appeal on that issue, and the Court of Appeals affirmed that ruling. We are set before the Supreme Court on Monday, and the issue before the Supreme Court is the authority issue, whether we as a city have legal authority to enact this provision under existing state law, or do we need enabling legislation such as is being proposed before this committee? If the court does not reverse, then in order for us to have a program like this, we need enabling legislation. If the Supreme Court reverses and finds that under existing law, local municipalities such as Minneapolis have the authority to do the program, then in our case, the constitutional issues have not been litigated. And what would happen is it would be reversed back to the trial court, and Mr. Bass would have the opportunity to litigate his constitutional issues that he raised. In each, the Court of Appeals case does not necessarily mean that we will prevail, but it's my belief that because the arguments are very similar, that because the Court of Appeals has weighed in and held that the school bus arm law is constitutional as far as prosecuting an owner who is not the driver, it's my belief that in litigating the constitutional issues, should it get to that point in our Stop on Red case, the state will prevail on the constitutional issue. I can't say 100% that we will. Each case is viewed on its own merits. Every judge views the decision and makes their own decision. But I believe that the Court of Appeals case certainly is a very favorable decision for the city of Minneapolis and for the proposition of this bill. But it could go, you know, a case could come up, we could enact this law, could go up on appeal, and the Court of Appeals could do something different. They're not held by that precedent, but I believe it would be considered very, very strongly in any future decisions on the constitutional issues.
Okay, I appreciate that. I do have one question,
Senator,
that goes
Olson.
A little bit in a different direction. It was based on some of the testimony that we had at the last hearing, and that was related to, you know, what other measures, if this is truly a safety concern, could reduce and maybe not catch people if that's not the mission. I know I drive through Minneapolis frequently, and I appreciate the sequencing in many of the arterials going through town, that the timing of lights is such that it kind of maintains the traffic flow. But in and I don't know I don't know exactly where these places are located, if that's kind of the slowing of traffic that catches and then people run it trying to keep up with timing, or I don't know if it was Rich or if it was the gentleman from ACLU that suggested things like leaving the yellow light on a bit longer, or having all go red for a brief moment so that cars get out of the way. That's still not going to stop all, but it is to what extent is this examined, that you're really trying to get we're trusting the officers and the examiners that they're going after the egregious runners and maybe not some of these incidental, just being caught on the yellow light because it turned red before the last the hind bumper was out of the intersection. Could you clarify a little bit what other kinds of things you may have done as a part of your stoplight control with measures like that before determining that this is the way that you need to go?
Mr. Chair and
Senator,
I can answer that question.
Officer Reinhardt.
We've looked at other measures, and in fact, we have enacted many of those measures. There is the option of an all red. We've used other measures such as the all red phase. We have looked at the timing of not just the yellow light, but the green and the red. We have set those to standards that come from the Federal Department of Transportation. They've been approved by MnDOT, and they're also the standards that we use in Minnesota. Minneapolis Public Works.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we're going to have to get this moving here. We have spent most of our time on it, and what we have is Senator Larson has been on deck here, and then we have some amendments, and then we have some testimony from Rich Neumeister. We will have a short amount of discussion on that, and then we're going to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I'd move the A3 amendment. And, Mr. Chair, as the A3 amendment's being passed out, I would just make one comment that I hope that we'd resist the temptation to limit this bill to Minneapolis only. I think that there is a lot of interest in many other communities, and the bill is permissive, so our local authorities have the decision about whether or not to implement. So I know that Bloomington, for example, would be greatly disappointed if they didn't have the opportunity. I think they feel that they are ready. But the A3 amendment perhaps speaks a little to the issue that we should provide some additional direction or some additional parameters to local units of government as it relates to this issue, and would require an engineering review of an intersection that the city would or that a local authority would want to implement this, and would require them to identify safety problems at the intersection and to determine if the automated enforcement system is appropriate for that intersection, and also to determine if other things such as road improvements, improved signal visibility, traffic timing, and other items might be appropriate as well. So I would ask for the committee's support of the A3 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I support the amendment. These are some points brought forward by Mr. Neumeister on Tuesday. These are things that the city is already doing, so placing this in statute is appropriate and desirable.
Senator Dibble supports the amendment. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment.
Senator Boniff.
Mr. Chair, I offer the A2 amendment. And this amendment is in response to the concern that this is just a money-making effort for the contractor, the city. And so this amendment says that a contract with a private entity for operation of a program under this section must not base payment to the private entity on the number of citations issued. So we don't want any entity getting rich off of how many tickets are offered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. This was also brought forward by the testimony of Mr. Neumeister on Tuesday. It's an excellent point, and I think it's appropriate as well to incorporate this amendment.
Senator Dibble supports the amendment. All in favor say aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye. All opposed, same sign.
Mr. Chair, we didn't actually see the amendment yet. We don't have the A2.
Sorry.
We've got the A3, but... Mr. Chair, it's already been adopted. I mean, so wait for me because you already adopted it, whether we had it or not.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
I have a particular
I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
Senator Fischbach, you do not have a particular objection to it?
No, I'm just saying you've already adopted it, so yes. Whether I did or not, it really wouldn't matter at this
okay.
point.
Mr. Chair, if
it could be reconsidered.
Yes. I'd be glad to move for reconsideration if Senator Fischbach has objections.
Mr. Chair, I'm just pointing out that we really need to, you know, let people see the amendment before we move ahead and adopt it.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, unfortunately...
Senator Olsen.
Unfortunately, I'm a vice chair, and I need to go chair a committee, so I've got to leave, and so I'm sorry that I will not be here for your vote.
Why don't we just move the
let's vote.
The amendment. There's nothing more than anybody can say that
Mr. Chair,
change
I don't
their
think anybody's going to change their minds.
Yes.
Let's vote.
Let's move the bill.
Mr. Chair,
we do have Mr. Neumeister.
Mr.
If we could
Chair,
open.
You know, yes. That's fine.
Senator
I don't mind that. I'm ready to vote.
Okay.
But someday when I got to leave, I hope Senator Langseth says the same thing. And
I certainly will.
Oh,
we'll
yeah,
do that for you.
I'm sure you will. So
I
thank
will.
You.
Okay.
We have 30 minutes left on, or okay. Sorry, we have 15 minutes left on this two-hour
And Mr. Chair, I've had running conversations with Mr. Neumeister, and he's been very patient with me as we've tried to manage all the load of this week. But I will commit to Mr. Neumeister.
Mr. Neumeister said he would speak for 1 minute.
Okay.
Would you like to speak, Mr. Neumeister?
Good.
Yeah. And I will meet with Mr. Neumeister for as long as he wants to meet with. And certainly I think Senator Ma will
move
over to the table. So I move Senate file 1071 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Judiciary.
Senator Dibble
Mr.
moves.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Day.
I'd like roll call. Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I noticed that Senator Jungbauer isn't here, and he's been very involved in I wonder if someone could go get him. I'm sure he would want to be here.
Mr. Chair, I think he just stepped out to the men's room, so if we could just wait for him to come back.
I see some signals
coming,
so
say
whoever
that.
Knows where he is, go get him. I don't care.
Mr. Chair, in the meantime, may I make a comment?
Senator Hartman.
People violate laws, not cars, and not guns. And you could take this same argument and apply it to that. We would never dream of charging and convicting a gun owner if they weren't at the scene of the crime. And that is what we'd be doing. So please apply your logic here. Think about what this means for the long term of Minnesota. Yes, it's a slippery slope on the privacy issues, but it's also a huge slippery slope on the legal issues. And just because the constitutionality has not been brought to our Supreme Court doesn't mean that there aren't significant constitutional problems with this bill. And so I hope the members will vote no.
Take the roll.
Take the roll.
We will take. Senator Dibble. Senator Dibble moves 1071 as amended to be moved to Judiciary Committee.
Bono?
And we will have a roll.
Yes. Carlson?
Yes.
Day?
No.
Dibble?
Yes.
Dahl?
Yes.
Fishbach?
No.
Gimsey? Absent. Jungbauer?
No.
Koch? Absent. Langseth?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Moi?
Yes.
Olsen?
Yes.
Olson?
No.
Ortman?
No.
Rest?
Yes.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sieben?
Yes.
And Skoy is absent. It passes. Oh, yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. We have 11 ayes, 1, 2, 3,
4, 5,
and
5
nays.
There being 11 ayes and 5 nays, the motion is adopted.
All right, great.
Okay. I'm going to run upstairs and see if they're still meeting up there.
Senator Dibble, 16. Senator Dibble, 1672.
Mr. Chair and members, this was a bill that we heard in subcommittee earlier this week. Again, the days run together. I don't even remember what day that was. It had not yet been formally introduced, so we could not take formal action on that. Mr. Chair and members, the bill would authorize joint powers among three or more contiguous counties to impose a half-cent sales tax. And the $20 per vehicle tax, that's for the purpose of not imposing a half-cent sales tax on the full price of the sale of a vehicle. I think that's technical language that confines that, that occur within those counties' jurisdictions. And upon creating that joint powers agreement, they would have the ability to establish they could enact those funds for transportation purposes. And then engage in a regional planning process for corridor projects, transportation projects of any sort, whether they be roads or transit, and then administer those funds for the purpose of capital expenses. And it sets forth all the criteria around the establishment, the election, the voting system, et cetera, for that. And Mr. Chair, my intent would be to lay this bill on the table for possible inclusion in the larger transportation bill. Mr. Schreiber is here, who can help us explain the bill further. It was drafted in conjunction with the Metropolitan Regional Transit Ways Development Board, if the committee desires.
Senator Dibble, do you need to bring up your testifiers?
Only if the committee has further questions.
The committee have any questions? The motion is to lay it on the table.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I wish all my bills went like that.
Okay. Senator Latz is on his way down. And is Senator Rest available?
State government budget is meeting simultaneously. She went up there. Yes. 12.
Which I think
we're waiting for Senator Latz right now, and he will cover Senate File 1637 and Senate File 1638.
You want to?
Yeah, I'm done with it.
Senate File 1637, Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Appreciate your taking testimony today. Which one did you have up, 1637?
Senate File 1637, Trunk Highway 100.
Highway 100. Those of you who are present when I talked about the MnDOT Transparency Bill heard most of my pitch on Highway 100 already and the importance of reconstructing that on a permanent basis to standards for a three-lane trunk highway, or a six-lane freeway standards, actually. And there's $154 million that are involved in doing this as of the last estimates. Of course, the price goes up every year like it does for every other project. I have with me the city manager from St. Louis Park and the public works director as well, and they would like to offer you some thoughts on how this is important not only for our community but for, frankly, the entire West Metro region. So Tom Harmoning is from the city of St. Louis Park and city manager.
Thank you. Identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Tom Harmoning, spelled H-A-R-M-E-N-I-N-G. I'm the city manager for the city of St. Louis Park.
Mr. Harmoning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senator Latz did a nice job of summarizing this particular issue. Highway 100, or the portion of Highway 100 in St. Louis Park, is the last stretch of that freeway that is still in a two-lane configuration with bridges built back in the 1930s. This is a project that has been on MnDOT's plans for reconstruction for a number of years and a project that has been continually pushed off repeatedly, which has really left the community in limbo and I think the traveling public in general in the West Metro area in limbo in terms of trying to move through that area. Most recently, we were informed by MnDOT that the 10-year plan that they have in place is in draft form proposed to push the reconstruction of Highway 100 out past 2018. Right now it's in their plan for 2014. Actually, when the MVEST proposal was being made last year, the governor's office suggested that this project could move up to as early as 2010. But now, unfortunately, as I said, it's being moved out to past 2018, which is obviously quite discouraging to the community, to property owners who are targeted for acquisition for this project. They're being left in limbo, and we're concerned about some safety issues associated with that stretch of Highway 100. The bridges are quite old. Noise standards aren't being met in that area. In fact, the PCA has said that that noise wall should be installed by 2015 to ensure compliance with noise standards. So we are here asking for consideration on behalf of MnDOT to assist in providing the necessary funding to allow this project to proceed,
Mr. Chairman,
or at least stay on schedule.
Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, do we know this obviously hasn't had an earmark from the federal level that that would help to push it forward, but I presume it's eligible for federal funding, and to what extent would this amount to just the state share or is this the overall cost of that project?
Mr. Harmoning.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Olson, my understanding is this project is eligible for federal participation. The cost that we note in the bill is the total cost of the project.
Yes. And Mr. Chairman, having driven that many times, is there something unique about this section that makes them want to put it off? I know that people have noted how much improved even the modest changes that they made. Do you think that MnDOT is seeing some comfort level there on that part that is causing them to put it off, or are there some unusual complications in this particular stretch that makes them avoid tackling it sooner rather than later?
Mr. Harmony.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, my understanding from MnDOT representatives is the reason they're proposing to put it off is solely because of a lack of funding.
Financial, okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I can attest to the fact
Senator
that
Olson.
Keeping people in limbo, having had, 50 years attempting to resolve a thing through Long Lake and Orono with extending Highway 12, and it's been, I think, 15 years at least that we've been working on from start to not quite yet finished. But the people, it is very hard on people whose property is affected by that of being able to make decisions with their lives and move on. So I have some sympathy for you, definitely.
Any other questions from the committee? With that, this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in a larger transportation bill. Let's go to 1638. And Senator Latz, I want to remind you that we are getting close to the end of our allotted time.
We have one bill left.
And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, 1638 is a similar request, but for a different highway and intersection in St. Louis Park, Trunk Highway 7. Which runs east-west out of Minneapolis and all the way out to Minnetonka and points much farther west into western Minnesota. And Wooddale Avenue is the intersection that crosses it right near the high school in St. Louis Park. There's a lot of traffic there, a lot of pedestrian traffic, a lot of auto traffic. It's a heavily congested area. Really, it needs to be grade separated in order to allow traffic to start flowing more smoothly there and more safely. And there's also a regional trail, which is just off of this intersection, which needs to be dealt with as well. I'll ask Mr. Harmony to elaborate.
Mr. Harmony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this project is about $18 million in scope. It does have regional impacts in that it relates to Trunk Highway 7, which is a Minnesota highway. This project is intended, as Senator Last pointed out, to address significant safety and congestion issues. Of this $18 million project, we've raised $9 million. The city itself has provided $3 million towards this project in terms of land acquisition. We've acquired the land proactively as it became available to allow for this project. Plus, we've received approximately $6 million in federal funding for this project through the STIP process. Those monies were allocated by the TAB board. Our concern is we're going to lose that federal money if we don't get a match from the state on this project. We do need to get this project underway by about 2010, 2011. The state does support this project. When I speak of the state, I mean MnDOT. And when we've met with them to talk about matching funds for this project, which are necessary, again, funding or a lack of funding are the reasons that are pointed out to us. Again, we've got half the money for this project. The city's into it significantly. We've got federal money, and we're just looking for a state match to make sure we don't lose that federal money. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee? Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Harmony, nice to see you. When does MnDOT say it's on their priority list?
Mr. Harmony.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, I don't know if MnDOT has placed any priority associated with this project. I do know as it went through the Transportation Advisory Board, TAB board process, they were supportive of the project. We've talked to them repeatedly about it. They're supportive of this project as well as a grade separated crossing about a half mile down the road at 7 in Louisiana. But I don't believe they have it a grade given to it, if you will, in terms of priority.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? With that, this project, or this Senate File 1638 will be laid over for possible inclusion in a larger transportation bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a procedural request. I don't know if it's something
Senator
that you
Latz.
Can accommodate or not. When I was before the committee on the MnDOT transparency proposal, Senate File 924, you asked me what it was my desire to have done with it, and I had informed the committee that I understood that the Finance Committee had wanted to keep it within its purview. For future consideration. It turns out I had my information wrong. It's the House that is doing it that way, and that it would have been my request at the time, if I had known that, to ask this committee to pass it on to the floor of the Senate. I don't know if there's a way to take it off the table or if you're willing to even consider doing that at this stage. But if you could, I'd ask that you would consider doing that.
Senator Letts, I've been advised that because it has a fiscal note to it, it does have to go to finance. So, did we lay it over?
We laid it on the table,
Mr. Chair.
So,
or it could be included in our omnibus bill, which was so we kept it. We laid it on the table. But, you know,
you could move it to go to finance. No,
we'll probably have to move for reconsideration and leave it to. Recommended to pass in the bill of finance. Maybe we can do it at the next hearing. Let's do it at the next hearing because we don't have. Or if he wants it to be considered to be part of the. And if we have to ask him.
Okay, we need to. Should we ask?
We can't move it to the floor.
Mr.
Answer
Mr.
Senator Letts, we cannot move it to the floor. We can take it off the table and move it to finance. However, we don't have copies of it, and it wasn't on the agenda.
Well, Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Technically, it's in finance. Yeah. It was sent to finance, and it's referred to this division.
No, I.
It was sent
from,
to policy.
We laid it over. We laid it on the table.
It was sent to. It was, direct,
it was sent
it,
to here?
Referred directly to transportation.
Yes.
It was not referred to finance.
Yes.
But it now has a fiscal motion.
It's laid on the table here.
Finance.
Yes.
So, Mr. Chairman, it's already in finance. I mean,
no,
it's not the full finance committee.
We're policy.
It's in policy.
Yeah.
Policy.
Aren't we in the we're policy and finance here?
And when something gets referred directly to our policy division,
Mr. Chairman,
sorry,
I can't hear you.
If
you,
Billy will explain.
We don't have it in front of us anyway.
Yes, we do not have it in front of us. We'll do some work here on figuring it out.
All right, thank you.
Sounds like we have.
Thank you.
Okay. And the answer is? We'll have to take it up on Tuesday.
Does he?
I'm sorry?
Senator Letts, we will have to take it up on Tuesday. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Senator Resk, file 1624.
Mr. Chairman, last year there was a task force that was set up to look at the use of electronic payments for paying state obligations of one sort or another. That task force report was heard in the State and Local Government Committee, and the Senate File 1624 is a result of one of the recommendations that was made in that task force. 1624 is a customer service bill. It gives customers applying for renewing their motor vehicle licenses, driver's licenses, or Minnesota ID cards the option of paying by credit or debit card, an option that is not generally available right now. To offset the cost of accepting payment by credit or debit card, which will run in the neighborhood of 2 to 2.5%, the fees for these licenses, cards, or certificates will be raised by an amount to offset those costs. Some may ask, why not just charge an additional fee to those who would choose to use a credit or debit card? But the fact is that the credit card industry does not permit an additional fee to be assessed in face-to-face or in-person transactions, as I'm sure you're all familiar. You, whether you pay by check, cash, or credit card, the price on an item in a store is exactly the same, but we are paying for the credit card costs. So the cost for allowing sales by credit card is paid by everyone. It is also, I think, interesting to note that In the one instance where the Department of Public Safety does allow credit cards to be used for all vehicle license renewal, that is online sales, it does charge a uniform fee of $1.25 to all customers, whether they pay by credit card or by allowing the department to debit their checking account. This bill simply makes that practice consistent for all vehicle license renewals, whether in person or online. It eliminates the inconvenience that many now experience of being turned away from renewing their motor vehicle licenses because they are told they can't use a credit or debit card and don't have enough cash or a checkbook, which is becoming even less a way of paying for things with them to complete the transaction. It also eliminates or minimizes the frequently higher ATM fees that customers incur when they show up to renew their motor vehicle licenses, planning on using a credit or debit card, and then are pointed to an ATM machine to come up with the cash necessary to complete the transaction when the credit or debit card is declined. Kevin Corbett is here from the Washington County Division of Property Records, Taxpayer Services, and Elections to provide further information. I do note, and I'm sure you'll see on the summary and throughout the bill, that there are blanks for what would actually need to be the level of the registration fee, but it is the heart of the bill is in section 8. Yes, the heart of the bill is in, I'm sorry, is in section 10 on page 8, which sets up this this program. We need additional information from the department to know what kinds of numbers would be put into the blanks, and I don't have an amendment to accomplish that now, but if when the bill is laid over and before we take up the omnibus bill, we certainly want that information from the department. If you'll let Mr. Corbett comment for a very brief time, then I would ask that you lay the bill over.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members,
your name for the record.
Kevin Corbett with Washington County. We operate 3 license centers in Woodbury, Forest Lake, and Stillwater. Just to give you an example of the number of transactions we do, about 275,000 transactions per year in those 3 centers. And we collect about $25 million that then gets transferred to the state of Minnesota, and we only keep about $1.5 million at the county level. So most of our money we collect is transferred to the state. And that's one of the reasons why we're here today, is asking for your help, is that in areas where counties or cities take credit card payments and we control the fees or keep the revenue, we are absorbing these costs by ourselves and not asking for the state to be part of the solution. In these license center operations where the vast majority or the huge majority of the cost or the money we're taking in is actually being transferred to the state government, we cannot absorb the entire transactional fee on that credit card by ourselves. Just to give you an example, there'd be many transactions where the credit card fee actually exceeds the amount of the local filing fee that is kept. And so we'd be losing money accepting that transaction, whereas currently our filing fee goes to pay for our staff, for our heating, our building, all those kind of things that we've got to do to run our centers. We know that customers are demanding this. We hear it every day in our license centers. Most of our customer comments that are negative in our license centers are because we do not allow the acceptance of credit and debit. Most businesses are, or a lot of businesses are posting signs saying no checks allowed now, and we're going actually the opposite direction of that. We also know that NSF checks are a major problem in these local offices. You will probably know that in a case where a deputy takes an NSF check, we actually still forward the money to the state of Minnesota for that transaction, and the deputy is out at that entire amount. Just in those 3 license centers, our net cost on that was about $9,000 last year, which is equivalent to about 2,000 of our transaction filing fees. So we are losing 2,000 of our, doing our first 2,000 transactions for free each year because of these NSF checks, and we go to electronic payments that will help that problem. I would finally say that we do know that there's some work that needs to be done on the language of this bill to make this work administratively. We've been working with the Department of Finance and DVS on the task force, and we will continue to do that after this hearing today to find a a mechanism that is administratively possible, that minimizes the cost you need to add to each transaction for the credit card acceptance, but that we think this is necessary to get us into the realm of electronic payments for these local offices. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Corbett. Senator Rest,
Mr. Chairman, I do know that the departments have some concerns about, as he mentioned, about the administrative, how to make this administratively efficient, and we will continue to work with them on that. So I would just request that you lay the bill over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Any questions from the committee? With that, we will lay this bill over and until you get a fiscal note. Is that correct? That you're going to be.
We'll be working with the department for what numbers.
Good. Thank you very much. Well, that concludes our business for today. The committee is adjourned.
Hey, Kevin.